The following program is presented by the Nerdy Show Podcast Network. Geeky programming for all nerds across the multiverse. All Nerdy Show programming is made possible by a comic shop, Orlando's number one comic shop and nerd destination, Nerdapalooza, the world's largest nerd music festival, and with generous support of listeners like you. For more Nerdy Show podcasts, community forums, and to learn how you can support this and other fine Nerdy Show programming, visit nerdyshow.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Epic Podcast. Introducing your hosts, Nelson Lugo and Schaefer the Dark Lord.
Ladies and gentlemen, coming straight to you from the spacious and beautiful Studio 6C in Astoria, Queens, this is the Epic Podcast, Episode 7. My name is Nelson Lugo. Are you gonna say something?
I'm saying it inside my mind.
Oh my God, I hate you. I hate you so much. Every damn episode, you do something weird when it comes to your introduction. Why can't I say, hi, I'm Nelson Lugo. Why is it so hard for you to just say, and I'm Schaefer the Dark Lord? Why can't you just do that?
It's not so hard. That's exactly what I said. I just said it inside. And I thought that by now you and I would have like Tomax and Zaymot powers and you would be able to hear it. But clearly, that money that I paid that mystic for those powers was wasted.
For the record, I would give anything for Toma and Zaymot powers, but we don't have them.
And my name is Schaefer the Dark Lord.
Hey, and here we are, ladies and gentlemen, once again, episode 7, lucky number 7. Here we are, coming to you at the end of February, and all kinds of craziness happened this month. And we have a fantastic episode. No spoilers, but I'm probably going to cry. I'm gonna leave you with that image.
I feel that is a spoiler.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I cry all the time. I could be talking about anything, really. I could be talking about the episode of Voyager I saw last night, basically.
You've never cried onto a microphone in my apartment.
That's true.
I'm sorry, I mean in my studio.
We'll bleep that out.
Studio 6C.
Studio 6C. So what have you been up to there, Schaefer? How's your month been?
So far, it's been all right.
Thank you for sharing. And this has been the Epic Podcast. Tune in next week.
Cue the fade-out music. It's been a pretty good month. The thing that I'm most excited about is that this past weekend, as you know, I used to be the co-producer of Epic Win Burlesque.
Yes. And then I stepped down. I fired you.
And then I stepped down.
I fired you.
I submitted a 2 weeks notice. But I still come back periodically as in a hosting capacity. I'm still a gun for hire.
Yes.
And this weekend was the first main stage show of Epic Win's fourth season. It was Epic Win Burlesque the Musical. And I came back for that one to co-host.
Well, you came back hard. I mean, like, you know, as someone who stepped down because they didn't want to take on all the responsibilities of creating a show, you literally created the show.
I look.
You wrote the script. You rewrote three song parodies. You casted backup singers. You created choreography. You directed an end tableau. You created Epic Win the Musical.
Look, I have a hard time doing things a little. And that goes for everything. That goes for Batman and drugs and sex. I have a hard time with moderation. So I came back and I went hog wild and threw myself into the musical for a month. And I feel it really paid off. We had an awesome two-night run. It was Epic Win the Musical, which really shouldn't have worked.
No. In fact, all of the disparate ingredients basically spell disaster.
Right.
For this little dumb idea. But it all came together beautifully. It all worked wonderfully well. Everything meshed. Everything worked. All the jokes landed. And I was really nervous about this one because I didn't think that there would be enough theater geeks out there to want to come out and see this. But boy, was I wrong. They were out in spades. So
and they were so good because, you know, we always have over the years, we've always had playlists of music that play in the house when the audience is seating,
yeah,
or at intermission when, yeah, we take a break and they go to the bar. That's always thematic. Like, yeah, when we had a Batman show, all the songs kind of reference Batman. This time we had these two playlists that was just full of show tunes. Yeah. So we're backstage getting ready for the second act, and you can hear like the whole house just, yeah, singing along.
The audience is just, they're all leading a sing-along to the pre-show and intermission soundtrack, which I thought was just beautiful.
You,
it was
musical
a beautiful
theater
thing.
Nerds are special nerds.
Yeah, I mean, we all work very, very hard on these shows to put them together. But they're always kind of a sort of a modular hodgepodge of acts where the host, which is usually you or I, kind of create a framework in order to hang them in.
Sure. And we usually write an outline.
Yeah.
And then you and I, as we are psychotically gifted at improv. what I meant by that is that we just kind of rely on our natural contentious banter,
yes,
to carry a show.
Yes.
We'll create an outline and we'll just kind of give ourselves some wiggle room and like, here, hit this note, do,
right,
this, get from this, yeah, point to this point, and really keep it snappy because the show is about the performers and not about us.
Right.
This time there was a script.
Yeah, I remember a few weeks before the show, I contacted you and I said, hey, we should probably get together for a writing session because I have some ideas. And you said, fine. And then 5 minutes later, you emailed me the entire script for the show.
I did not. I emailed you two bits. At that point, I'd only scripted two bits.
No, I knew, but then you never got back. All I remember is getting an email from you without any prior meeting, without any writing session. Hey, Nelson, here's the script. And...
We had a writing session. You came over and we wrote a bunch
of... No, we didn't.
You came over that one night. We wrote a bunch of jokes together.
No.
Yes.
No.
You wrote some jokes. Lugo wrote a few of the jokes in the show.
I wrote one joke and it was a racist joke.
It was funny.
It was, well, to be clear, audience, it was a racist joke against Puerto Ricans. I myself am Puerto Rican.
Gasp!
I know. I can make Puerto Rican jokes. And I gave Schaefer permission to tell a Puerto Rican joke.
Which I still noted was your joke on stage.
But you didn't need to. It was still funny by itself.
Well, I don't want to go on and on and on, yeah, about the show, but I do want to talk about like my one particular favorite moment of the show.
Okay.
First of all, to back up a bit, we wrote a script and I also recorded some songs. I produced some songs for the show.
Yes.
They were all songs from Little Shop of Horrors.
That you rewrote.
Right. One was Dadu, which we did for our opening. One was Suddenly, which we did for our closing.
Right.
And then I did a dentist number. I recorded all these songs and brought in some members of our cast who were also very talented singers, B.B. Hart, Boo Bess, Francine the Lucid Dream, and produced these three songs. We gave away some CDs to folks at the show.
Uh-huh.
My plan is to put these songs online so that the audience beyond,
oh, wonderful,
the show will be able,
wonderful,
to get them. Now, I don't know if I will have that ready and hosted by the time this episode goes, so check the show notes. There might be a link in there to these three songs.
If not, then every episode of the Epic Podcast is going to have a segment called Epic Win the Musical / the Soundtrack Update.
But here was my particular favorite moment of the show.
Yeah.
We've hosted these shows over the years at a place called the Tank Theater.
Yes.
And they've been very good to us.
They have.
And we've been very good to them.
Yes, we have.
A little bit of backstory before that. As one might suspect,
mm-hmm,
you can no longer smoke indoors in New York City.
Oh, okay. I know where this
Anywhere.
Is going.
However, theater folk found a workaround for that. And apparently, it's okay if you smoke on stage if it's part of a theatrical performance.
Yes.
Which is why burlesquers oftentimes will have smoking as a part of their act. They'll come on stage and they'll smoke a cigarette all.
Yeah.
You know, and then all the smokers in the room start drooling because they smell it and they can't have one. But they get away. You can get away with,
yes,
it.
Yes, because it was a theatrical
because
performance.
Because of that. And Epic Win shows even. There have been a couple of times,
yeah, they're,
when
they're,
smoking has happened on stage.
Two or three times, yeah.
So a number of the performers in the show, they all did acts that were based on scenes from musical theater. And one of the performers, I'm not going to use anybody's names in this.
You don't want to out them. Yeah.
One of the performers did a number based on Hair.
Which was fantastic.
Right. She like edited together five songs from Hair and she actually sang it and she had a big
hippie dress.
Yeah,
it was a wonderful medley.
It was awesome. And everybody got to sing along because everybody loves the music from Hair. But here's the thing. She had another one of the performers come on stage and get naked and like feed her fake acid during,
sure,
it. And one of the things she wanted to do was smoke a joint and blow the smoke in her face.
Right.
I had a conversation with one of the performers the day before who said, like, I want to do this. Should I roll tobacco? Should I use pot? And I was like, just use pot. It'll be realistic. So one of the performers then brought a full joint on stage. And during the course of the act, smoked this entire joint on stage in a tiny little black box windowless theater. Yeah. And so did somebody from the tank say something to you? After?
Well, before that, I said something to you.
No. Let's not do that part. Let's do the part where the tank said something
to you. The tank basically looked at me and said, was that what I think it was? And I said, being coy, I don't know. What do you think it was? And then they said, well, I just need to know whose idea was that. Was that yours or Schaefer's? I said it was Schaefer's.
Go on. Is there more to that story? Because I know there is.
No, wait. What is it?
Keep going.
No, that's it. That's all I got.
No. Because there's a part in that story where Trey came to you. You the producer of the show.
Yeah.
The boss.
Yeah.
The point of contact.
Yeah.
Came to you and said, were they smoking pot in the show? And you said, I tried to talk him out of it.
I did.
Right.
Yeah, I did.
I have a text message from you.
Yeah.
The day before, I wrote to you and said, hey, we're going to do this pot. They're going to do this pot smoking bit in the show.
Right.
And your response was, oh my.
Because I thought.
And then I said, I had a conversation with her about it. And you said, cool. That is not talking me out of anything.
No. When you, I thought they were going to theatrically smoke pot, like fake it. I didn't realize it was going
to
be real pot.
Do you want me to read the text to you? I told you we are going to smoke real weed on, they are going to smoke real weed on stage. And you said,
oh, I don't remember
I
don't remember that at all.
I don't know. Maybe I haven't learned the code over the years, but oh my is hardly talking me out of something. Anyway, so Lugo passed them off to me.
Yeah,
and boy, did they give it to me.
Yeah, they gave you the business.
They were really upset about that. And so we didn't do it the second night. And, you know, to be fair, they're within their right. I mean, it was a pretty stupid thing.
Well, it's two things. One, you're smoking weed on stage.
A whole joint.
Yeah, a whole joint.
A rather big joint.
Too. Right. So putting the legalities of that aside for just a moment, she had to light it. And according to U.S. fire codes, in New York theaters, right now, the law's been changed. You can't have an open flame of any kind on stage in any capacity.
When did that become law?
Oh, geez. This was like maybe 6 months ago.
Really? Is that new?
Yeah, relative. Like 6 months to a year.
Broadway can't have candles on stage?
Nope. No candles. No matches. Like, they can't light a match. You can't light a lighter. You can't light a Zippo.
You can't say Macbeth.
You can't say... you can't do that for different reasons, but, yeah. That show was amazing. It was. It was amazing for so many damn reasons.
Yeah, but you sold me out.
Yeah, but you should be used to it by now.
I don't know why I took out that bullet. You're the producer of the show. I didn't even smoke the weed on stage!
Yeah, well...
One of them was pretty okay with it, but the guy who holds the lease was decidedly un-okay with it.
Yeah, well, for the record, I was also decidedly un-okay with it, but I've kind of learned...
Not me, man.
...that sometimes I don't own my own show and the inmates run the asylum.
When I'm around, you don't.
Yeah.
You know what? I liked it because now we had 2 minutes of content for our podcast.
I mean, February was great for me on many levels. Like, we had our wild card show the first Saturday of February, which was great. And then we had our first double feature show, which we got screwed by the snowstorm, by the winter storm. I forget what the name of it was now. I don't remember. Was it Sandy? Yeah,
Sandy was the hurricane, the winter storm, Nemo.
Nemo, that's it. The winter storm Nemo kind of screwed us because it was a blizzard 24 hours before the show, and that kind of cut into the amount of people that came out to see it.
Kind of a candy-ass blizzard.
No, it was pretty significant. It was fast.
There was snow, yes.
Yeah, it was just, I mean, it was good. It was like, 4 to 6 inches?
I feel like calling heavy snowfall a blizzard is also like when you get a really bad cold and you say you have the flu.
Well,
then it cheapens what the extreme one is.
No, I get
that. A blizzard is a freaking blizzard, man. There was a blizzard a few years ago. It was like 2.5 feet of snow.
Yeah, that was awesome. I remember
that's
that.
A blizzard.
Valentine's Day came and went.
Sure did.
Basically. And this month I went on a few dates. Yeah.
Are you getting better at learning how to pick up social cues?
I'm getting better at asking whether that's a social cue.
How did your February dates go?
I went on 3 dates with 3 women. No, that's not true. I went on dates with 3 women.
And what's today? The 19th?
Yes.
Settle down, Casanova.
Well, no, these were very like casual, like drinks in a bar conversation kinds of things. And 2 of them didn't really pan out. They're both lovely, and I'm sure we'll be still be friends and whatnot, but they didn't really, there's not much in common there. But there's one that I've seen a couple of times now, and there's possibility there.
Hmm.
Yeah. And that's about as much as I'm willing to sort of talk about at this point.
I'm glad that you've learned some restraint. I'm glad you've learned some restraint when the internet and a microphone are pointed at you. At last, that wish I made on the Zoltar machine came true.
But I'm also getting, you know, the internet hate of Nelson Lugo continues. I am not as beloved a burlesque producer in the New York scene as I thought I was. You know, there are some naysayers, there are some critics, and there are some people who believe that what I do isn't valid, which, you know, fine by me. I mean, they're entitled to their opinion. I'm still going to keep doing what I'm doing.
You know what?
What's that?
You're beloved by me.
Oh, that's your job, motherfucker.
Well,
so
that's fair.
But yeah, I mean, I'm kind of like in the midst of some post-show blues right now. Because of the musical, because we worked so damn hard on it. But other than that, feeling all right.
Terrific. So we're going to read some, we have some.
Oh, yeah.
We're not going to do that yet, though.
Oh, that's right. Yes, we had, we announced the haiku contest, and a whopping 5 of you wrote in.
Did those 5 people write multiple entries?
No. Each one wrote
did
one.
Did you count them all for syllables?
No, I'm just going to trust that they're haikus. Also,
what do you mean trust that there are? It's such an
well. Also, I have you here. You're the grammar Nazi. You're the one who will basically attest to its validity.
I don't like you using Nazi flippantly, and being able to count to 17 doesn't have anything to do with grammar.
Shut up.
All right, we'll read these at the end.
So our guest is here. So we're going to take a very short break, and we'll be back with more Epic Podcast.
But end with your fist. Who knew I'd fall for a sadomasochist? When I'm on my knees, I know it's true. 'Cause I can't wait for my next. I'm like, I love you. You be the shit.
Gentlemen, our guest on the program this month is a board-certified doctor of neuropsychology by day and the drummer of a raunchy doo-wop rock and roll band called Kudzu and the Faggots by night. In the interest of full disclosure, she is also my ex-wife. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the program Dr. Eviler.
Dr. Eviler!
Is that the
that's the din of the crowd?
Oh, they just went nuts. They were on their feet.
You have no idea.
That was great. Thunderous applause. Thunderous.
So, Dr. Eviler, thank you so much for being with us on our February/Valentine's Day episode.
You're so welcome.
So glad you could make it.
Me too.
Why did I agree to this?
I would also like to point out that you didn't hear a doorbell in this segment because, well, Dr. Eviler used to live here, so she just made her way into the building. She didn't. True. She did not need to be buzzed in for entry.
Not at all. Not at all. Walked in like she owned the joint.
It's good to see you.
Yeah, you too.
This is awkward.
No, it's not.
Oh, you have no idea. It's going to get so much more awkward.
Yeah, okay. I'm going to, like I said.
This is nothing.
I am going
this is
to,
nothing.
I'm going to be made of tears by the end of this thing. Yeah. I'm going to cry into your microphone.
You know, I might just even ask you to take a knee. And
I don't take knees.
Dr. E and I'll duke it out.
I'll curl into some kind of like fetal position.
So since February is the month of Valentine's Day, which is the holiday of love, we thought it would be fitting to have you here to discuss some science, but also, yeah, this is going to be a little weird. So we're gonna drink some shots.
Yeah.
What are we drinking, Doctor?
It's Don Julio tequila that I got in Costa Rica, duty free.
All right.
So duty free tequila.
Here we go. Everybody clinky,
that's,
clinky, clinky.
That's clinky. D-U-T-Y.
Yes, that's not like the poo
kind.
We'll get them all. It'll hear.
Oh. Clinky. Oh, spillage.
Oh, that's the first
of
many.
Here we go. Smooth.
Fuck.
Smooth.
It's wasted like on you, Schaefer.
Like a baby's bottom.
It is. I mean, it's good. It's better than crappy tequila. But it's still all tequila to me.
So doctor, let's at least start off neutrally here. And you are board certified.
Yes.
And can you talk to us about what happens in the brain chemically during emotions of love or arousal or attraction, and what is actually transpiring in the brain when that happens?
Here's the thing. I actually don't work on anything having to do with love in the brain. The brain's a huge organ.
We're off to a great start.
So I downloaded a bunch of articles, but since I have a real job that I have to actually work in, I didn't actually have time to read them. So.
All right. So I guess we'll just go to the tears.
That being said, yes. I did actually, you know, while I was sitting here waiting for you guys to be done.
While we were talking about smoking weed at the Tank Theater.
Yes, okay. Yes. I did read the abstracts of a few articles, and I got to say, it's fascinating.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yes. Right. I'd have to go get my iPad to actually look at them again.
Well, then, tell you what, folks, we'll post some links to some of the abstract articles.
But, man, interesting stuff. Really interesting stuff. I got to tell you, really interesting stuff.
We're off to a great start.
There you have it. So, all right. So, you say that this is a particular area of study with which you aren't so familiar.
No.
Where is your focus?
Well, my specialty is epilepsy.
Mm-hmm.
But my focus is in brain damage, insults to the brain, and it's assessing brain functioning in people who it has somehow gone awry in some way. And so I'll do that. Basically, doctors will refer patients to me when they have no idea what's going on, and I will assess their cognitive functioning, and based on their pattern of performance, I will tell the doctor what the diagnosis is and what should be done about it. I also I have been doing a lot of forensic work lately, which is very interesting and stimulating. So in those cases, I get called by lawyers to evaluate their clients and basically see if there's anything they can use in court.
And you will then frequently will testify as an expert witness.
Yes.
Right.
Oh, wow.
Because I'm an expert.
Right. You are a doctor. You didn't just stumble upon those three letters that follow your name.
Oh, wait. Should I put on my coat?
Yeah. Let the record show that Dr. Eviler actually brought a lab coat here.
Right. To a podcast.
Well, right. Mostly for our benefit so that we would treat her with the respect that she deserves.
Yes.
So that we would respect the clothing. How frequently do you even wear a lab coat at work?
I wear it when I go into the hospital if I'm seeing an inpatient, because I can easily go in without wearing it, But when I go into units where they don't know me, in the nurse's station, all that, and I go in, and oftentimes I don't look like your typical doctor, and they look at me like I'm somebody who's infiltrating their unit. So I wear my doctor's coat because nobody could get a doctor's coat ever anywhere.
No.
I wear my...
I tried, but it turns out you need 19 years of education.
Yeah.
I have two at home.
So I wear my doctor's coat so that they know I'm a doctor.
Do you also frequently wear a DO t-shirt underneath your lab coat?
No. This is because I have not done laundry.
Oh, I see.
I have a question, doctor. Yes. So if I were to get hit in the head with a blunt object, can I manifest some kind of latent superhuman ability and or like play the piano like a concert pianist?
No.
Okay. I have a follow-up. If I were to, say, take a bath, and I accidentally drop a toaster in there and I electrocute myself. Can I hear women's thoughts?
You would if you were alive.
I see.
Is that how he got the powers in that movie?
Yes. He basically had one foot in the tub and then he dropped like a curling iron or something in there.
Before we get away from your doctor work, tell us about what is a WADA?
Oh, the WADA test.
Do you know what this is?
No, what is this?
Oh, you're in for a treat.
Okay.
The WADA test is actually not nearly as interesting as the intraoperative mapping, but the WADA test is basically when we're going in to operate on somebody's brain who's got epilepsy. My specialty is epilepsy. Who has epilepsy, and we need to basically take out the epileptogenic focus. So if you think of your Latin, epileptogenic means where the epilepsy is coming from. And if that area overlines or overlaps with an area that has to do with language, meaning the left hemisphere, we need to know that. So basically the WADA test, we anesthetize one half of the brain at a time, and I test the other half of the brain. And then we'll anesthetize that half, and I test the other. So basically, we inject into the left hemisphere. I test the right hemisphere functions. We inject to the right hemisphere. I assess the left hemisphere functions. And from that, we can see where is language? Is it overlapping with the region we want to resect? And does anything about their memory performance between those tell us anything about, first of all, where the focus is, but also whether they're going to be at risk for decline after surgery.
Wait, you're talking about prior to the surgical removal of brain
matter. Yes, and that gets me to the intraoperative mapping.
Holy crap.
Which is where I go into the operating room, and after they've done the craniotomy, which is basically the term for opening up the brain, they'll put a little hole in the scalp and in the skull and take out a little circle of the skull and peel back the meninges, and the brain is exposed. And then I go in and we wake the patient up and I test them while they're awake and undergoing surgery to make sure we're not impacting their function.
You ask a series of questions to the patient.
No. So basically, if you imagine there's like a, I would say, imagine the diameter of a tennis ball, maybe.
Okay.
That's about the size of the craniotomy. So meaning they've sawed through a circular sized diameter of a tennis ball out of the skull. They take that, what we call a bone flap, out. And
bone flap.
They take the bone flap out, and then the meninges are peeled back and with pins and stuff. The actual brain tissue does not have pain receptors. So that once that's all done, when we wake the patient up, as long as they're using lidocaine and stuff on the meninges, there's no pain involved. And there is, so basically once their brain is exposed, the area that they want to resect is exposed, we wake them up, and then the surgeon has, it's called an Ojimon stimulator, and it basically looks like a wand. We'll just keep it at wand.
Okay. That's language I understand.
And the neurosurgeon has a wand, and he And I say he only because I've never worked with female neurosurgeons, but
I'm glad that you clarified that.
He touches the brain. Well, first I say it to the surgeon. Go.
Of course you do. Of course you say
it. And then he stimulates the brain. And while he's stimulating that one tiny little area, and I would say if you look at your index finger, that's about the size of the wand, but there's two in order to have an electrical circuit. You have to have two nodes. So there's basically two little prongs coming off of that.
Okay.
Each one is stimulating.
Right.
So it's coming off and it's about the width of a finger. And he stimulates an area of the brain. And when whatever area he's stimulating, it's knocking out functioning in that area. So when I test that, if they can't do something while he's stimulating it, that's an area they need for that function.
Got it.
So I say, go. I start testing. Then I hear what their response is, and depending on what their response is, I say okay. And oftentimes there's a matter of me saying, had you pulled away yet, or had you stopped stimulating yet? Because sometimes what'll happen is if we knock out an area that's, for example, needed in naming, I show them a picture and I say, what's this? And I know that they can name it because I've already done a baseline, and I show them the picture, and they look at it and he's stimulating, and all of a sudden they go, house. And I say, did you just take the stimulator away? Yeah. And literally, it's like split second. The second the stimulator comes off, they're able to name it. But while it was on, they weren't. That's an area that they need for naming.
What do they say? Do they say something else? Do they say nonsense? Or are they
right
just
on
mute?
If we're right on a naming area, they won't say anything. If we're approaching areas needed, and it's not just naming. So it's speech, it's naming, it's comprehension, it's... There's auditory naming and visual naming, so there's different. But as we're approaching those areas, they get closer and closer to just total dysfunction of the right. skill. But as we're getting a little bit farther out, then it's like they'll say something that might approximate that. Or they'll...
And all of this is basically to determine that area of the brain that is causing the seizures.
Well, no, in this case it's and the surgeon I work with most, and I want to give him a shout out, but I'm not going to.
You can't, don't do it.
But he's actually a neuro-oncologist, and so the workup, if it's an epilepsy surgery, we do the WADA test. We do an extraoperative mapping, which is basically before they get into the operating room, we literally map out, because they've got a grid implanted in their brain, an 8x8 electrode grid on the area that we know the seizures are generally coming from that area, but they put the grid on the brain because we'll get a much better idea of where the seizures are coming from.
Oh, I see. So that you could just really specifically.
Specifically,
narrow in.
They, yeah. Well, so they put the grid in to find the seizures, but, and then they put the bone flap back on, and there's wires coming out of the brain.
Right.
And then they go back to their hospital room. But while that grid is in, we stimulate each of those little nodes within the grid. So by the time we've done that, I often don't need to go into the operating room.
Because they know exactly
where everything is. We spend painstaking hours literally mapping it out. And I've got a map of their brain and the grid, and we have strips all around too. And I literally say, this is naming, this is that, this is that. And you can see, this is where everything is.
Got it.
And then we'll see, this is where the seizure focus is. If after we've done all that, the seizure focus overlaps with areas that are needed for language, then I go in. But oftentimes seizures disrupt functioning. So where the seizure is coming from, there's no function there, and I don't have to go in. More often, I have to go in when there's somebody who's got a tumor.
Holy crap.
So I get called into the operating room a lot by our neuro-oncologist. And in those cases, it's, if you think about the brain, the surface of the brain, the tumor is embedded within the brain parenchyma. And there's lots of ways that you can get in to get that tumor. We're basically trying to find the approach.
Right, the best way to sort of
best
get
way
in.
To get in. Got and it. So we want to basically go in through cortex that has no function.
Right.
So we're mapping out all the areas, and then all of a sudden it's like, okay, this is a good area to enter. And then, so we'll enter in that area that we've not found any function. He'll go in, he'll take out the tumor. But then as he's actually resecting, so actually removing tumor, I will keep just doing a more sort of fluid evaluation, not with the stimulation, where we're making sure that their functioning is intact and remaining intact. In order to have the best tumor outcome, you want to remove the entire tumor. Ideally, you want to also remove the margins of the tumor. So that
just
means
to be safe.
Yeah. But sometimes the margins are functional. So periodically I'll go in and keep testing them as they're going through the surgery to make sure that, and it's actually, it makes me feel very important because I can't, well, pretty much every time I'm the one who decides when they stop the surgery.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Huh. So I say, I say, we're done. And they say, okay.
Is the instrument that they use to remove tumors, I always imagine it to look like a melon baller. Is that?
No.
No?
No.
Because they're like, it's
much more disgusting than that. No.
Oh, it's worse than
a melon
baller.
It's worse than a
melon
baller?
Yes. Oh. It's basically, and so when I was in training and doing this, my first time I was sitting next to my supervisor and realized there was a tube on one side of me and a tube on the other side of me, and one was yellow and one was a frothy pink. The yellow was the pee coming from their catheter.
Right.
The pink was the tissue that was being removed from their brain.
Oh, dear.
And basically what they do is it's like a suction and they cauterize suction.
Remove. Oh, I see.
If it's a big swath of air, I mean, if there's like, they know they're going to lob off a huge area.
Yeah.
They'll just like.
Just cut it.
Lob it off and take it. But then to get more refined resection.
Sure.
They'll use an instrument that basically, it kind of looks like, so they'll use a microscope that you can see up on a big video screen.
Cool.
And it looks kind of like an alien insect because it's these two little weird, like very, very hot probes, looks like almost like a pincher of an insect.
Yeah.
And they're just working away at it. And for you listening audience out there, you can't see my fingers, but imagine... Imagine what was the movie with the huge insects in space?
Starship Troopers.
Yes. Imagine one of those insects and they're huge pinchers, and basically they're like pinching away areas, and it burns it and cauterizes it at the same time,
oh, wow.
And then it sucks it in, so that what I was seeing coming through that pink frothy thing that collects in a bin
was
basically just this like frothy cauterized tissue.
What is this device called?
Fuck if I know.
Oh crap. Well, we'd do like a Google image search or wiki entry for
you know
it.
What?
Oh,
you know,
I can find it. I have a very good relationship with my neurosurgeon.
You know what?
You find out.
I'll find out.
We'll put it in the.
I'll find out what it's called. I'll find out.
We'll put the link.
Because it is quite fascinating.
Yeah.
I just want the record to show that I'm now going to start a band. My band's name is going to be Skull Flap.
No, it's Bone Flap.
Look, you name your band however you want. I'll name my band.
If you
want to
be wrong, do whatever you want. But but the fact is that all of us brain people would think you were an idiot.
Well,
that's probably not going to be his target audience. Also, he doesn't play music, so this is just a thing that he's saying out loud.
Okay.
God damn it.
He hasn't spoken in a while.
Inside voice.
Yeah. He hasn't said anything out loud in a while, so he had to.
I don't even know where to go from that. That is the most awesome, disgusting thing I've heard in a while.
Yeah, it's a fun part of my job.
Yeah.
I think when you...
So sorry I didn't read those articles.
Doesn't... We're not really so concerned that you didn't do your research about the brain chemistry of love.
Yeah.
Oh,
although it is, seriously, it is fascinating.
No,
what you lack in love research, you more than made up for...
In awesomeness?
Gross brain tumor stories. So thank you.
Good.
What do you got there, Shane?
Speaking of band names, if we can just change focus.
Well, yeah.
Wait.
Do you have something else?
Yeah. Another shot of tequila, please.
Okay. Yeah, we should probably.
All right, we're going to take a break for tequila.
No, we're not taking a break. We're going to do this.
Live?
Yes.
All right, hold on.
Okay. We're going to do shots in real time.
Because believe it or not, I can talk and drink at the same time.
Give me your glass.
Did you? Let me ask you something.
Give me a glass.
Dr. Eviler, if that is your real name.
It is.
I'm assuming you took public transportation here.
No, I didn't.
You drove?
Yeah. Okay. Oh, I didn't tell you I'm sleeping over.
I mean, you still have keys, right?
Give me a glass. Oh dear God.
I am so bad at bad at drinking tequila.
So yeah, that's where we differ. I'm really good at it.
I'm
That's where we differ.
Oh, really want to start this now? It's too early.
I'm ready.
No, I think you made it clear a moment ago when you were like, yeah, because I have a real job.
Well, oh, come on.
Well, no, fair enough. Right. You do.
Tequila has been poured.
Here we go.
Clinky, 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 clinky.
Happy Valentine's Day.
Happy Valentine's
Third
Day.
Third shot down. Here we go.
Oh, God. It hurts.
Let's talk about her band before we start crying.
Can we?
Yes.
So, Dr. Eviler is also the drummer of a band called Kudzu and the Faggots. They are a 6-piece rock band, drums, bass, and guitar, and then 3 female vocalists.
Female vocalists.
Okay. Who do 3-part harmonies, and they wear matching dresses, and they shoot glitter cannons, and their songs are all about, abortions and handjobs.
much more than that.
The songs are about, like, broken relationships, but sex, and their songs are about love and sex.
Yeah,
which
and
is also.
Filthy mouths. So dirty.
The first record, I believe, was called "The Prettiest Girls with the Filthiest Mouths."
Yes. Yeah.
And Dr. Eviler is the drummer.
Ooh,
I wrote one. Bridge.
Though. I just want to test and make sure that that the bleep works on this.
Okay.
Is the drummer?
Oh, nice, nice bleep.
Thanks.
That was a really good bleep there.
It was good.
Yeah. So how long you been playing with Kudzu?
With Kudzu since 2008.
Wow. Okay.
Yep.
The first time I saw Kudzu and the Faggots,
mm-hmm.
I knew nothing about them going in. And this was like 2009, I think.
Mm. Was this at the Delancey?
It may have been, actually. It may have been the Delancey. This was their record release.
At Arlene's.
Yes, at Arlene's. Mm-hmm. Yes, thank you.
Wait.
And their first record release.
It was at Arlene's?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And... What I, as an uninitiated audience member, see are 3 attractive women of various shapes and sizes wearing 3 very pastel-y pink dresses. They all match. Hair ties and dresses, they all look exactly the same. And they're smiling and cute and, you know, very adorable. They're all adorable. And so I'm standing there thinking, oh, this is going to be awesome. This is going to be like a 3-part harmony doo-wop kind of.
Which it is.
Well, yeah, technically.
Okay.
But the shit that comes out of their mouth is
they're filthy.
Fucked up lyrics I have ever heard, and they do it with a smile a wink and a nod and joy. It's such a pleasure to hear some of the filthiest lyrics I've ever heard come out of some of the sweetest ladies.
I actually get sometimes embarrassed in practice.
Do you really?
And I am not easily.
No, you're a gross asshole.
I am a gross, disgusting 13-year-old boy.
Yes, you are.
And
I think
sometimes I go, oh my God.
Yeah.
Are you really going to go there?
They always do. The joy that they exude in the songs is so pure.
It is.
And so sincere and
absolutely,
earnest.
Absolutely.
That the foul, fucked up shit that they're saying, the dichotomy between those two things is hard to articulate in just a conversation in a podcast. You have to really experience them to get it.
Yeah, you do.
I guess you'll have to go to the link in the show notes.
Go to the link in the show notes. I'll post a video. They are a sight to behold. And I've always been sort of like a satellite fan of theirs.
Sure. So. You know, the material is really crass, but I feel like, and you're going on and on about it now. Oh my God, the most foul shit I've ever heard. Like,
well,
because apparently you never listen to Gigi Allen. But here... The point is,
but Gigi Allen is like a fucked up, like
yeah, like you expect it from Gigi Allen.
Wait, I'm just saying, like it's not the foulest shit that's ever been written.
Well, fair enough.
Wait. But that said, I appreciate that because it means they're pacing themselves. They're still, and you can get like they can get more disturbing territory.
You have idea what we have planned.
I have
no idea. In this coming year,
oh God,
we're actually taking a break right now. Our show has become a little stale because we're doing the same things over and over again,
uh-huh.
And so we've got some tricks up our sleeve for this year.
Well, I mean, stale for you because you've been doing the same things over.
Stale for the people who come to all of our shows.
Oh, I see.
So they're seeing the same thing, and it's not new and fun. And like, I mean, it still is fun.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's not shocking. And we want to reward the people who are actually there all the time. We don't want to reward the people who are like, man, maybe I'll go see the show.
Well, here's a question. How do you balance your career as a doctor, as an actual PhD, with the sort of the rigors of being in a band? How do you negotiate that sort of the pitfalls of that kind of scheduling?
Now, are we talking about time, or are we talking about energy?
Well, both. I guess both is what I'm really asking.
I feel really time is more the thing, because if I know anything about you, as I know a thing or two about you, energy isn't that much of a concern for you.
I have an
time,
abundance.
You have boundless energy, but you do have, your time is quite limited because you are working always.
Mm-hmm. So the way I look at that is that is my social life. I have no social life outside of my band.
Oh, dear. Okay.
So basically, we have practice once a week.
Yeah.
That is when I get to see my bestest of friends. And we practice 3 hours. We have shows every so often. And really, it's like, if you consider, if I didn't do that, I would never leave my house, pretty much.
So I guess touring is really out of the question for you.
And no, actually, it's not, because I have a rad job that I have 25 vacation days a year.
What?
Yeah. I have 5 weeks of vacation a year.
Nice.
And so I can really, I mean, I could take 2 weeks off to go on tour. The issue is less about touring, well, less about our time and more about six people in the band who are all doing lots of other stuff.
Right.
That trying to find everybody, time when everybody can do it is more of an issue. And, you know, everybody's got their projects, and so we don't have a manager. We don't have somebody who's stepping up and saying, I'm going to book this for you. And so not having somebody doing that for us.
I thought you did.
We did. We don't anymore.
Oh.
Oh, band drama. Wowzers.
You know, the band is six pieces, but the bassist and guitarist have changed a number of times.
Yeah.
I know you've had the same guitarist for a while, but you have had multiple guitarists and you have had multiple bassists.
Yeah.
But since the onset, it's been the three female vocalists and you have been the constants.
Yeah.
I kind of like that. I like that dynamic, that it seems like all of the boys in the band
they're
replaceable.
Yeah.
And they have been. Like, it's been proven.
Although I feel like
they want to step aside, you're like, whatever, you'll get somebody else. But the four women in the band are the band.
Yeah. I like the consistency of that. So
yeah, and I feel like our current bass player and guitar player are, I think, pretty stable at this point. They're great. But yeah, us four ladies, we've gone on like vacations together. We just went to Costa Rica together. We celebrated my birthday.
Aww.
In Costa Rica.
Happy birthday. I know it was in October.
That's okay. Yeah, you better know.
Happy birthday.
Thanks.
Timely.
I celebrated with you.
Did you?
Twice.
Oh, yeah, you did. Okay,
are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah, you did.
Look,
totally did.
I took you to a Mountain Goats concert for your birthday.
Yeah,
and
you did.
I also went to your birthday party at the karaoke bar.
And you got
me
Korean barbecue. Yeah, you totally did.
And I took you to Korean barbecue. Don't play that like BGG.
Easy.
I actually wasn't doing that. I was more like...
Easy,
Schaefer. You were just trying to search for the
Schaefer's
memory.
Schaefer's easy. Go easy, Schaefer.
All right, okay.
No, tell that Schaefer to go easy.
No. Both of you go easy.
So listen, if we throw... We'll throw some links up in the show notes, and obviously we'll throw the link to Kudzu's main website.
Mm.
But Kudzu has a number of music videos.
Mm.
If we throw up a link to one of those music videos, which one would you recommend?
I'd say New York Girls. It's a great video. It's a really good video.
New York Girls is probably my favorite.
It's a really good video.
Which one is that?
It's the music video for the song New York Girls.
No, duh. I don't know.
So
how do I answer that question?
I am not familiar.
Have you not seen this?
It's a music video for a song you don't know.
No. I've heard all their songs. I've seen all their videos, but I don't know the title of all the damn songs. Hum a few bars.
Really?
Yeah.
It's not like they speak very clearly.
The topics are very clearly made.
You know what, doctor? I understand why now you are no longer married.
Really?
Shape of the Dark Lord.
Oh, that's nothing.
You know what? Fuck. You know what? Fuck all that. We're beating around the bush. We're avoiding the topic we all came here to discuss. The both of you at one point were married.
Correct.
And now you are not.
Correct.
We aren't?
We're not.
Wait, are you just now finding this out? Okay. Holy shit, my heart just jumped out of my chest.
Ooh, can I actually talk about that for a moment?
Well, no. Go ahead. Yeah, if you want to go ahead and tee up the audience.
All right, here's the thing. They will let anybody get married in pretty much any state. It doesn't take any amount of work. When we got married, it was in the summer of 2006.
It was 2006.
Do you remember Dr. Eviler? Do you remember?
I do.
It was the summer of 2006, and we got married. We lived in New York at that time, but we went back to California for a wedding, and our wedding was beautiful. But we had to stop, but we had to go to a courthouse in what county? Was it San Mateo?
Santa Rosa? You were so hungover.
I was so freaking hungover.
Ridiculously hungover.
Look, my bachelor party was the night before in San Francisco, and it was one for the ages. So I was preposterously hungover, and I
And you sat in the car, actually.
No, I came in. I had to sign. I was there. Yeah, I remember. Okay. I remember what the office looked like. So I had to go in. They will let anybody. You go in there, you write down your name and sign some shit and blah, blah, blah. And you have a marriage license, and that's it. Now, getting divorced, that's a lot more difficult, state by state, clearly. Now, up until 2010, every state in the union had no-fault divorce, which meant that two people of their own accord could go in and sign a document and say, look, this marriage isn't working. We would like to get divorced without having to bring lawyers into it. Every state in the union except for New York State. It was the only one. Montana had it. Yeah. Alabama had it. Yeah. Hawaii had it. New York didn't have it. Dr. Eviler and I separated in 2009. But we separated. We did not get divorced because New York State did not have no-fault divorce at that time, and we didn't want to pay lawyers. So we waited. And come the fall of 2010, New York State finally caught up with the rest of the country and passed no-fault divorce. So we were like, yes, now we can do this without bringing in lawyers.
Wait. Let me just correct that. Now we can do this, meaning can do this without bringing in lawyers, because I did the entire first process myself.
I'm so glad you pointed out that point.
Yeah, please.
So now that no-fault divorce got passed, can now do this. So she did. So in 2010, fall of 2010, October, I believe, you started the process for divorce. You filed the papers, you got all the appropriate documents. You had me serve the appropriate documents that I had to sign, which I received in January of 2011.
I believe. I believe Jess said you got served.
Yes, J Train of Kudzu served me. I remember that day so well. I got
the text.
No, I took the day off work because there was like a massive train failure that day. So I took the day off work. I came home. I sat in my apartment. I played Assassin's Creed Brotherhood all day. And then Jess, aka J Train of Kudzu, showed up. She served me the papers. I remember her handing me the papers outside in the little entryway to the building and looking at her and saying, are you going to say it? And she was like, yeah, you got served. Served me the papers. I signed all the appropriate documentation, sent it back to Dr. Eviler, and we went on our way. Now, once you purchase an index number to start your divorce proceeding, you have a year until it expires. So, Dr. Eviler... Oh, God, I hate calling you that. Dr. Eviler, then it was in her court because she was the one that filed for divorce, filed the appropriate stuff, maybe not all of it, because some of it she slept on for almost a year.
No, I did file all of it, just not in a timely manner necessarily, because, hey, I have a neurologic illness that prevented me from doing it in a timely manner, okay?
Okay. Neurologic illness. Okay.
Right. I am having the time of my life
right now. Anyway, so...
I didn't see you stepping up, dude.
Oh, I'm so glad you pointed that out, too. So we get to the end of our year, and it's like about a week before our index number is going to expire. And we received documentation that says that our documents...
I might have gotten it a little earlier.
Okay.
I just didn't know.
We receive a letter that says our documentation is not in order. We are missing documents or there is inconsistent information. Regardless of what it wasn't complete. And we had about a week before our index number expired that we had for 1 year.
Hey,
at this point, if you I'm not done. Hold on. Okay. You're going to get your moment. So we get to that point and it's too late for us to go back and fix all of this documentation to meet it before our...
But we could have had I not been going to India.
What?
I believe I called you and said, I'm going to India. This needs to be done.
Yes, that's right.
While I'm in India.
Right. The plaintiff in the divorce called me up and said, hey, take care of this. I'm going to India. Peace.
Yeah.
Regardless, our index number expired. So that was, so that was in late 2011. So in early 2012, we were like, well, we failed. We failed at being married. We failed at getting divorced. So this is going to happen again. And you said, look, dude, I tried. It's your turn. And that's fair. That is absolutely fair. I'm not disparaging you for that. That is absolutely fair. You did give it a shot. It didn't work out. It was my turn to try it. So then I filed for divorce.
Backed by your leagues of lawyers behind you.
I then filed. And again, it took like all year because it's such an arduous process. It's such a difficult, arduous process. Yeah. I was then in charge of filing for divorce. And I did. And I filed all the documents and I got it all in near the end of the year. So as far as I was concerned, we were divorced. Now, after you submit all of this information, you have to wait several months until you get confirmation. They send you back a postcard in the mail to let you know that either A, your divorce has gone through, or B, there's stuff
you're
missing.
You're a fucking asshole.
You're an asshole. Yeah. You need to submit additional documentation.
Basically, you're an asshole and a loser.
Now, although I submitted all the documentation in late 2012, or not even that late.
Yeah, it was early. It was like mid.
Late summer, early fall 2012. Even though I got it all in then, I still had to wait several months. So I didn't get the documentation confirming that our divorce was final until this month.
When was it, my darling husband?
I'm so glad you asked, my love.
Ex-husband, ex-love.
It came in the mail on Valentine's Day. A day which I spent alone already. I mean, I didn't have Valentine's Day planned, but I spent it alone and I came home on Valentine's Day to be greeted with confirmation of our divorce after 3 years of separation on Valentine's Day. Now, this is just a postcard saying, like,
I think my response was, yay.
Yeah, I actually wrote to you. It was a little wistful. I was feeling a little sad and a little like
nostalgic, maybe.
Yeah, little bit. And I was like, oh, God, I guess it's real. So I texted her and I was like, hey, by the way, our divorce is final. And she wrote back, awesome! Now, to be fair, look, it had been 3 years and a process had been going on and on. And look, it's going to make filing taxes a lot easier for both of us this year.
Yeah,
that's true. That's true.
Easier, not necessarily as lucrative, but whatever.
Easier. So I got the postcard.
Yes.
And then I go, last Friday, I go to the courthouse.
The 15th
to City Hall.
Of February.
15th of February, I go to the courthouse to pick up two certified documents of our judgment of divorce. This is paperwork that confirms it is stamped, it's embossed, it's signed by a judge.
A magistrate.
It is official documentation of it. I get two copies of it because I'm a thoughtful ex-husband.
Of what? You're saying I didn't ever get you copies of shit?
Easy.
Well, not of this, because you never made it this far.
Easy. Well, I've made you copies of every other...
Go thing. Easy,
hey,
Schaefer.
I made you copies of everything else.
Doctor, easy.
So anyway.
Dark Lord,
so I get
easy.
The two copies, and I bring them back.
Yeah.
And now I have official documentation that Dr. Evil and I are, in fact, officially divorced.
Can we spill some blood on those documents?
Maybe. Do you want to cut ourselves?
Totally.
I sometimes cut just so that I can feel something.
No, you don't. That's not a thing you do.
Anyway, I get two copies of it. But here's the thing. I cannot legally give you your documentation because you have to be served. And you cannot be served by somebody who is the plaintiff in your case.
Oh, dear.
But I do have official documentation for you if you would like it. Are you...
Wait.
Oh, fuck.
Now, is this like you know, if there's a... whatchamacallit? When you're getting served, if you don't actually accept it, then it doesn't happen. So can I say that I'm not going to accept it unless the person who serves me does the helicopter?
You can say that.
That's what I'm saying.
It doesn't really matter. You're fucking divorced.
That's, as I said in my text, awesome.
What exactly is the helicopter?
Are you talking about the breakdance move or the dick trick?
Oh, whoa. What's the dick trick?
That's when you like...
You spin it around.
You were talking about the breakdance move.
I was, but now I'm kind of talking about the dick trick.
I think I want to try and do the breakdance move.
Wait, what's the helicopter?
Well, Nelson, you're going to be doing it. So you better learn it.
No. Here's what you're gonna get. You're gonna get me.
No. You're gonna be all la 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 la. No.
I'm gonna hand you an envelope.
La, la, la.
I'm gonna say you've been served.
Wait, don't tell the story before you tell the story. Here's the deal. So I have your documentation, but right. I am not allowed to give it to you.
Bring it on.
So Nelson, as my agent.
Oh dear.
Will you do the honors?
Well, you're handing me.
Wait, I just want to make sure that the audience hears this. This is an envelope.
Okay.
Full of documents.
You're handing me an envelope.
It's a signed judgment of divorce.
Inside the envelope is... I just dropped the envelope. Inside the envelope is... Yeah, it's a judgment of divorce. Holy shit, look at that. And now I'm going to partially seal it, and I'm going to hand it...
Nope, helicopter. Helicopter.
Wait, do you want the breakdance or the dick move?
Either one really would suffice.
I'm going to owe you that...
No.
You have been served.
All right, fine.
Oh, witnessed.
You are now officially divorced.
Wait. This is the sound of a high five.
Let the record show that both the Dark Lord and the Doctor high fived each other.
Because as snarky as we can get with each other, we do love each other.
Deeply.
A whole fucking lot.
Deeply.
Well, I guess that goes on into I guess my next the thing that I'm going to moderate, the question I'm going to ask, and the segment I'm going to moderate. Essentially, you two have been close and dear friends for a very, very long time,
punctuated by a period of total and utter hatred. But yes,
wait, even during the period of total and utter hatred, we were still not.
Well, hold on.
We're still in touch.
We're getting ahead of each other.
Okay.
You guys started off with a very deep and very sincere friendship that grew into love.
There was never a friendship. It was like...
It was love.
It was,
okay,
yeah.
Fine. It was love at first sight.
Yeah, it was.
You guys got married.
It was Adam smashing.
You had a very important and significant relationship for many, many years.
Mm-hmm.
And then it ultimately did not work out. And then you had a moment where you hated each other and you got divorced. But now it would be safe to assume that the both of you have a far more profound relationship with each other than you probably ever have had.
Yeah. I want only the best.
Yes.
I love you deeply.
Yes.
I always will.
I
will always refer to you forever. I will always refer to you as the love of my life.
I completely concur.
Having said that, I mean, there were some significant things that just did not work and did not function as a working marriage or relationship.
Mm-hmm.
So what would you, the both of you, actually, I'm posing this to both of you. What would you say to the next Mrs. Dark Lord or the next Mr. Doctor that would give them sort of a leg up in a relationship?
Give
that,
them pause?
Yes.
Before they entered into
not necessarily,
the institution of marriage?
Well, not necessarily pause, but at least information that's critical for building a relationship that's going to last, you know, longer than what you guys had.
Don't get married. We were so good before we got married.
Ah, come on.
All right, we were good shortly after we got married.
Yeah, oh, this is opening such a can of worms that I'm not going to get into. So yeah, I'll answer that first.
Okay, go.
I would say a warning.
Oh, this is your warning to future
warning.
Partners of mine.
This is my warning to the future Mrs. Dark Lords, because they won't be doctors.
No, well, and because they won't.
I'm assuming they won't be doctors.
So right. You were never Mrs. Schaefer.
No.
Okay.
So the future Mrs. Dark Lords. I would say the biggest one is your inability to tolerate discomfort.
I think my current wife Nelson Lugo can confirm that
discomfort can range from a subway train to an IKEA an airport security line.
So basically, are you talking about Mexico?
So basically, I'm talking about like any time.
Yeah, but I threw a fucking temper tantrum in Mexico.
You've thrown several. So it got to the point that it was like, you know what? I'll go and I'll buy our like new crazy whatever furniture we're about to buy by myself because it was just easier.
So let me get this straight. So any situation that someone would find themselves in to be mildly annoying would be
even more annoying if you're with
to shit for the Dark Lord.
Well, no, it's like any situation that you might be in that would be mildly annoying.
Yeah.
That every other citizen of the United States would find mildly annoying. First of all, would be exponentially more annoying if you're with Mark. But there's actually, it's like, it's as though there's some like, why do I have to be experiencing this? Like a commute? Why do I have to be on a crowded subway train every day at 5 o'clock and come home to my wife who has cooked me dinner and I'm grumpy because I've just been commuting? And that was
fair enough.
That was pretty much it.
That's fair.
All right. Well, Mr.
I've come a long way since then. By the way.
You know, we've talked about this.
Mr. Schaefer, the Dark Lord.
Yes.
What pieces of sage wisdom would you have for the next Mr. Doctor that will never happen?
If you future Mr. the Doctor Eviler have a distaste or a strong aversion to being interrupted, then I would recommend that you address that issue very early on in the relationship. But really, ultimately, I don't know that that's going to matter so much. I would recommend that you keep all stories to 10 words or fewer. I'm not saying this in a total disparaging way. I'm saying this is a serious like user manual kind of thing. Look, you and I both have short attention spans.
Uh-huh.
Both of us. But
do I get a counter argument?
Of course you do.
Okay. Oh yeah.
You do tend to fade out a little bit sometimes, and I had to tell stories multiple times. And look, Hold on. In your defense,
yes.
I am long-winded.
Yes.
I tell stories that give too much exposition, too much backstory, too much information. I understand that.
Fuck, I know that.
Yeah, it's
I
like, get to the fucking point.
That's the note that I'm giving.
All right.
This is really more about me than you.
Okay.
Keep your stories as curt as possible, because otherwise...
Not curt, concise.
Okay, keep your stories as concise as possible because Dr. Eviler doesn't have a whole lot of time or patience for extraneous information in your storytelling. And she is not interested in humoring your overly detailed backstory to every story that you tell.
That's fair.
Dr. Eviler, rebuttal?
No, that's fair.
Oh, I've got one.
Oh, what is it?
One more piece of advice for your future partner.
Hold on. We're not turning this into a fucking stabby sex.
I want to hear it.
Be good to her.
Aww. Can I do my American Express commercial?
It has to be.
Yes, please do your commercial. Please do it.
Can I do it now?
Do it right now.
All right, ready?
Here we go.
Okay, so listening audience, this might be bleeped out at the end.
Listen.
This might be edited out. All right, ready?
Go.
Couch, $600. Wardrobe, $1,500. Bed, $1,000. Entertainment console, $2,000. 26-year-old burlesque dancer, priceless.
Oh, see, I see what you're saying there. You're saying that when we split up, I got all of the physical possessions
and
a 26-year-old
that's what I'm saying.
Dancer, new girlfriend.
Yeah.
I always wanted to say, and I remember when, in the early days of our separation,
Are you going to edit that out?
No.
Okay,
I remember the early days when we were sending like information back and forth. You would send me notes, when we were like first working out the promissory notes of how we were going to share our debts post divorce. I remember you kind of saying things like that. You're like, oh, well, you got to keep the apartment. Look, we lived in this apartment together, and I got the apartment.
Uh-huh.
And I got all the furniture. Oh yeah. Oh, that's right. I got everything. So and you gave prices to all of them because how much the couch cost and how much the wardrobe cost. And I was always like, oh yeah, I guess I did really get it really good. So what's the price that you would put on Darwin?
You know what though?
Yeah, or no, Wallace?
No, you know what though?
Hold on.
No. To our listeners, he is talking about two cats,
you know,
that we both raised from kittens.
Okay, but the fact is, the cats were like 2 months after you were willing to take the apartment and everything in it.
What?
The cats came in like what, November?
Yeah. Did I fight you on it?
No, you didn't. Nor should you.
You're welcome.
I didn't even consider fighting you.
I didn't even consider fighting you. You know why? Because I realized that it wasn't my place. You made a sound argument. I did not fight you on it at all.
Uh-huh.
Even though
I appreciated.
I cried my eyes out over it, and it sucked, and it still sucks. And it sucked the time I went to your apartment and saw them for the first time after like 3 years. But I never fought you on it at all because I realized how good I got it, and I thought that it was fair, and I hope you realized how much I felt like I lost.
I do. Can I mention one more thing?
Yes.
I want that mug, and let me tell you why.
What mug?
The coffee mug?
Yes.
What coffee mug?
The coffee mug that my friend Karen gave me in college. It's like worth $40 now.
Oh, the one she didn't know that she even didn't have anymore until like a few weeks ago when she was over and saw it.
That I always would say, like, what the fuck happened to that mug? Because when we separated, I was not thinking about mugs.
Well, no.
And the fact is, I actually really seriously do want the mug.
Fine, you can have it back.
Give her the damn mug.
Oh, Mark, you're pissed.
I'm not pissed.
You are.
No, I feel like you think
Yeah, you are.
No, I feel like you think that I like got it so fucking easy in our separation.
You know what, Mark? It's been almost 4 years now.
Yeah.
I don't think you got it easy. At the time, I thought you got it easy.
Yes, because
retrospectively
looking back, I think that the anguish you felt was you didn't feel quite as much anguish in those first few years. It was concentrated for you in a few months after I was feeling better. And I feel like you finally felt the anguish I felt. And this is being honest now. Yeah. That I finally got to see you feel the anguish I felt. And that to me was enough to make me it dissipated all my hatred and all my anger and all my... And so anything I'm saying now is not coming from a place of anger or a place of... It's, at this point, me just bringing up things that at one point I thought about and I don't think about anymore.
It's interesting being a third party in all of this and watching the two of you from a distance and knowing, like, the profound hurt that you, the doctor, were in when we last spoke, and knowing that Schaefer the Dark Lord has just now, well, not just now, but like recently within the past like year, I guess. Would that be fair?
Yeah. It's been almost a year now.
Yeah, where you are just now starting to deal with a lot of the fallout from the disintegration of your marriage. And
deal with is a key term, not experience, though. I just kind of like internalized it.
Yeah,
fucking.
Yeah, yeah. You repressed it. Like, I mean, yeah. I'm sure you had something waiting
for you on the other side, and I didn't, and so you delayed your experience of it.
You delayed yours for a bit.
To like 3 weeks.
That's fine.
And how long did you delay yours?
2 years.
Okay, so there we go. That's what I'm saying.
It's not weird. Weird is not the wrong word. It's interesting to note, like, because your marriage and my marriage kind of fell apart right around the same time.
Right.
You know, which is part of the reason why we're so close now.
Right. Shortly after we became friends, really.
Yeah. It's sort of like we became really good.
I remember going on a double date.
Yeah, well, I'm gonna say
like we first became friends. Remember, we went to the museum and we saw the exhibit, the superhero couture fashion.
We became
exhibit.
Very good drinking buddies. We became friendly with each other. Uh-huh. It wasn't until our marriages started to sort of disintegrating before our eyes where you and I sort of became close, and I got to see. And I always, and this is truth, I always envied you for being able to sort of bounce back as quickly as you did, because I fell apart hard, like deeply and dangerously hard. And I look to you and go, why can't I be more like Schaefer? And it's only now where I'm on the other side of it, and I'm actually starting to experience, you know, happiness and joy and fulfillment in my life, where I realize you kind of repressed all of that, and now you're kind of dealing with all this stuff on your own, and you're doing all the right things, like you're going to therapy and you're seeking help and you're acknowledging it, and it's so interesting to be. It's an interesting role reversal for me, where you were such a rock and you were such a place of certainty for me when I was going through my dark period. And I feel now like, you know, I get to be that for you, which is...
You've done a good job.
Well, thank you. I mean, I mean, it's wonderful that I get to do that for you, but it's also kind of weird in that it's like this two-year delayed reaction in all of it.
It was. I distracted myself for 2 years.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, I mean, I think this is very important to talk about. And I think it's very brave of the two of you to come here and sort of talk about it as well. Because I mean, I was also around when you guys hated the fuck out of each other.
And I never hated.
Well, okay. Maybe hate's a strong word, but there was a lot of animosity. There was a lot of anger. There was a lot of hurt feelings. There was a lot of lashing out, on both sides. And to see you both now is heartwarming. It really is. Like, you both, like, you know, we make light of the fact that you're both divorced, and that's always, you know, that's a good thing. But ultimately, you're the better for it. You're better friends. You're better people. You're better to each other as a result. You know, when you first pitched me the idea for this show, which was, hey, I'm going to get my ex-wife, and then you're going to call my ex-wife and have her in the room.
Is she still around?
She's still alive, as far as I know.
I haven't talked to her in years.
And you said, and I said to you, yeah, that's a great idea. I just want you to know that if you get my ex-wife in a room, you're the one who has to deal with me crying for 2 weeks straight.
Yeah.
Basically. I'll do it, but it'll be, it's going to be hard. No, it's going to be a harder job for you.
Mark and I have processed more in the last year than we did in the 8 years we were together.
It's true.
Yeah,
and because we have nothing to lose. And our problem was that we are both conflict avoidant, or were. I went to therapy when we first separated. He went to therapy more recently. But we both got there, and we both are learning how to deal with other people in a way that's healthy and adaptive. Whereas when we were together, there was so much, oh my God, I love this person so much. I don't ever want to make them upset in any way, ever.
Right.
Yeah, and so we avoided conflict at all cost to our detriment. And it ended up in the same nuclear explosion that we came together. Mm-hmm. We separated.
Yeah, it was. It was fast, intense.
Intense and furious.
Powerful. And was exactly the way we got together and the way that we separated.
But so, we have since then become like great friends.
Yeah.
And are finally being honest with each other, sort of.
So I guess the takeaway from this is...
Really?
Oh, stop. So the takeaway from this is don't avoid conflict. You know, yeah, if something's bothering you, find a way to talk about it in a caring and mature way and not point fingers and blame someone for it.
That being said, I think both of us probably take some comfort in the fact that we really are very different people, and I will never, ever have any regrets. And, you know, Mark was my first love, mm-hmm. and I'll never, ever capture that feeling of pure joy and that experience of falling in love for the first time.
Yeah.
And but the fact is that we are very different people, and the beauty of it is that now we're so close. I mean, we're really close, and we're so close that we can appreciate our differences, and we can appreciate the fact that, yeah, it probably wouldn't have worked out, and it was shitty the way it went down, but that's kind of the way we did everything.
Yeah.
You know, it was shitty the way it went down, but it was the way we did everything. And the fact is that we're very different people and we want very different things from life.
Yeah.
And now we can just enjoy each other for the things we know we love about each other.
Yeah.
And not have to try to force the things that we wish the other had.
Right.
And say, why aren't you this way or why aren't you that way? Which we would have forever been doing. And now we get to just be, you know, I love him unconditionally at this point.
Awesome.
Love you too. So,
I love you. Aww. Yeah,
I'm not going to fucking cry on this.
No.
Actually, I am. I'm not. I've cried enough. I really have.
It's very, very inspiring. It's a relationship I wish I had with my ex-wife.
Yeah.
I really do. Which I will never have. I'm pretty much convinced at this point that she burned more bridges than I thought were available. Mm-hmm. And she just kind of checked out, essentially. And it's, you know, even though it, you know, your path was full of strife and heartache and a lot of pain, and a lot of sorrow. I mean, the end result is that you have something better than what you originally mm-hmm. thought you had,
mm-hmm. That's true.
You know, and I'm, you know, I'm quite envious of that. I really am, you know, because I mean, just like you guys, like I'm absolutely aware that I had found the love of my life in my ex-wife. You know, and I'm okay saying that, even though that is something that's never going to ever manifest again in her. But it's just, it fills me with hope that there's, you know, possibility for happiness out there that is, you know, that I didn't even think was possible. So,
yeah.
I'd also like to point out to fans of my raps that, though I've already referenced Dr. Evil in two songs that I've released, I'm going to reference you again in a third one and maybe a fourth one on the new record.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
What songs?
We haven't heard them yet.
Don't get greedy. Wait till it comes out.
But I wrote two songs about you.
That's really nice.
No, the two songs you already know about.
Oh.
Which ones?
Black Metal Queen.
Oh, that's on the new album, though? Oh, no, I knew those.
No, I'm talking about the oldest and Nerd Last year.
Yeah, no, okay, that. I thought you meant...
No, there's two songs on the new one that you'll be referencing.
Do I get to still be...
Involved
in your album artwork?
Art? Yes.
Do I get to be involved in your album?
Actually, yes.
Oh, nice! All right, I'll take it.
I mean, you guys are like two of the most important people in my life.
I kind of hope that my ex listens to this, even though I
there's
know
no chance.
There's no chance in hell it will ever happen.
Given the fact that...
There's no chance that my ex is going to listen to it and she's on it.
Yeah, given the fact that I just had to admit to Mark that I've never listened to his podcast because I didn't know if it was a video podcast or not.
That's funny.
And I actually love him. Yeah, she's like
again. I don't fault you because I wouldn't listen to this thing either.
Good gravy.
Yeah, sorry, dude. How you doing there, Mark?
I'm good.
You sure?
Yeah.
You look like you're gonna hit me, kinda.
I don't want to hit you at all. I love you.
Okay. Doesn't he kind of though?
No. Happy Valentine's Day, everybody.
Happy Valentine's Day.
I would like to thank you for coming on the show.
It's Dr. my pleasure.
Eveler. Thank you, Dr. Eveler, for being very, very brave today. Thank you very much.
It's my pleasure.
And in case I didn't mention it enough times throughout the episode, I love you.
I love you too.
I
love you too, Nelson.
Once again, we would like to thank Dr. Eveler for being our guest on the podcast this month.
Yay.
Again, the din of the crowd is prevalent.
I'm going to say that shit got real for a good chunk of it.
I have never really spoken in much explicit detail about my marriage the end of my marriage online ever. So there you have it, audience.
There it is. The definitive story of the beginning, middle, and end of the Shape of the Dark Lord marriage.
Now, since this was our February episode, it was our Valentine's Day episode.
Yes, it was.
We asked our listeners, we invited them to participate in another contest. We asked them to write haikus either endorsing or condemning love.
That's correct.
With the promise of fabulous prizes.
And there are some fabulous prizes, actually.
Fabulous?
Yeah, we've got some fantastic DC Comics merchandise. Ball caps and wallets and things and hoot nannies. It's going to be great.
Oh, terrific. And we'll throw in some other stuff, too.
Yeah. But
you're going to get a box.
You're going to get a box of swag.
Yeah, we'll throw in some. There'll be some extra surprises. Maybe I'll forge Lugo's autograph on something. So that you don't get either my autograph or his. You get me faking his.
Right.
And I'll write it with my left foot.
And you'll never know. That's the beauty of it. You don't know if he's kidding or not.
I'm going to sign a headshot of Nasty Canasta with Lugo's name. That's what you're going to get as a prize. Now, look, normally when we do these episodes, after we do the segment with the host... Or
correct.
The guest.
Yes.
They leave.
They do. They leave.
And then you and I wrap up and we do the thing with the reader email or whatever, blah, blah, blah. We're going to make an exception this month. We're going to keep our guest, Dr. Evil, around and we're going to have her weigh in on some
of
your love hikes.
Because she's now drunk and cannot move from her chair.
We've been drinking duty-free tequila. She has to drive.
Delicious.
She has to drive. She also has to stick around for a little bit so that we can beat each other up with sticks.
Yeah, can you please wait till I'm gone until that happens?
You're going to use a hammer? Yeah, I only have one hammer because somebody else got one in the separation.
Oh, dear God. All right, look, I want my
hammer back.
We have, look, no, we're moving on. We're moving on to the haikus.
All right, here we go. Reader haikus.
We got five entries. Oh, we got six.
Do you want to read yours first?
Dr. Eveler is submitting a haiku. Let me read it. I will take it.
You want to read it first?
I'll read it first. Or do you know, you glance at it, and I'm going to look at it. Basically, the premise was to either be filled with the spirit of love or condemn the spirit of love. And our very first entry is from Dr. Eveler, who has just handed me a piece of paper, and it says, "You think you are right. I let you believe because... it does not matter."
I think we have a winner. Unfortunately,
she can't win. She's not eligible.
No, because she's not a listener.
Right. Well, not only that.
It's because I know somebody on the panel.
Well, no, you're not eligible. You're a guest on the podcast. You're not eligible to win.
Who decides if...
I decide because I'm the moderator.
We decide your eligibility, but you and I are going to help decide who wins. But that's...
Can I make me win?
No.
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 Do you really want a Superman hat?
Exactly.
It's going to mean a lot more to our audience.
Okay, so we have...
you're going to stick around, though, and help judge.
Yes, we have... Yes. Can we do the haikus, please? Can we just move on to the haikus?
Yes, please.
All right. We have Kevin W.
What up, Kevin W.?
He wrote his entire email in the form of a haiku, but his entry is this. "A double-edged sword, whether with or without it, you're going to cry."
Oh, okay. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
I'm into it. What do you think?
Yeah. And the syllables are there. I've counted.
Yeah.
So it works as a haiku syllable-wise. A double-edged sword, with or without it, you're going to cry. Kind of poignant.
That's really bleak.
That's deep.
Like really bleak.
Yeah.
It's like basically you can love.
Yeah.
Or you cannot love. Either way, you're
tears.
Fine.
Yeah.
Tears will happen.
That's like...
Well, I mean, that's kind of true. Like, tears of joy. That's a good thing. No,
I don't think that's what Kevin W. was shooting for.
Yeah, yeah. Probably. I got to say, being a glasses half full kind of guy, making lemons out of lemonade, I feel like double-edged sword. Fucking spread that's some bleak. Butter on some toast.
That's bleak. Yeah, that's some bleak shit. All right. All right, so we have Robert J.
What up, Robert J.?
He says he loves haiku. And so here we go. Inspiration hit. Something about love. Oh, shit. Damn. Already spent.
Yeah.
I don't really get it. Inspiration hit, exclamation point. Inspiration, semicolon, hit, exclamation point.
I like the use of the semicolon, I gotta say.
Something about love, comma.
Used it incorrectly, actually.
Oh, shit, exclamation point. Damn, comma, already spent, period.
All right. That's actually, with the punctuation, I like it more.
Oh, all right.
Okay.
There you go.
Okay.
I can do like a whole Victor Borga routine.
Yeah, with the punctuation, I liked it a little more.
We have another haiku from a C. Muldrow.
What up, C. Muldrow?
What up, C. Muldrow? I think C. Muldrow should get a prize for having written an email, 7 emails for 7 podcasts.
Yeah.
Here she is writing, Dear Dynamic Duo, here's her entry for the haiku contest. Cupid aims his bow, arrows puncture vital bits, blood spasming fits.
I like that just because she used the word bits.
Yeah.
Because I personally like to refer to my bits as bits.
I like that she threw a rhyme into a haiku.
Yeah, that's a double thing. I personally like that she worked in Cupid in there. The whole Valentine's Day angle, you know, very, very topical.
Yeah.
I like this one a lot. Also, I like arrows.
And it's a little gory.
Yeah.
She's talking about like basically like putting
the visceral reaction, yes,
into your vagina.
Well, that and also like the visceral reaction of getting pierced with arrows by Cupid
in your vagina and your balls.
Right.
Okay. All right.
Which to me, that's kind of awesome.
All right. Moving on.
C. Muldrow, you just got the Dr. Evil bump.
Totally.
You got the Dr. Evil stamp of approval.
Yeah, totally.
We have Alex A.
What up, Alex A?
He says.
Or she?
I'm guessing it's a he.
All right. Guess all you want.
Fell in love again, but no one caught me this time. Fuck, I broke my legs.
Definitely a girl.
I get the intention. I get like fell in love again. It's a callback to falling, right?
Right.
You broke your legs because you fell because no one caught you.
Right.
Fell in love again, but no one caught me this time. Fuck, I broke my legs. Missed opportunities. I get, yeah, I see, you know, I sort of like the harshness of love.
It's
yeah.
It's kind of beautiful.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I get it. I mean, it doesn't exactly work, but I see it. I see it. We have a Scott F.
What up, Scott F?
Valentine's gift idea. A pig's head on her doorstep. Attached note, fuck you.
Yeah, we're going to have to disqualify that one because it is not a haiku.
It does not scan as 575.
Nope.
I will say this. It's a noble attempt.
No, it's really mean-spirited, it's too.
And well,
it's mean and it's not a haiku.
Well, it's a good college try.
But wait, so what's this?
I don't mind the mean
spirit. What's that person's
name
again?
Scott F.
So Scott F, read the instructions next time.
I don't like. I honestly don't mind the mean spiritedness of it because
I don't mind the mean spirit. Well, yeah. I kind of do.
Well, no. I mean, if you're writing a haiku to condemn love, then you're gonna get mean spirited.
Yeah, that's fine. But you know, the fact is you're not gonna get very far in life if you don't read the directions.
All right. So we are down to we got 5 emails, but only 4 that are.
So why don't we put mine in for that 5th one?
No, you're not. No, you're
yours is great.
Yours is fantastic.
Why don't we have the listening audience call in?
You get no. That's not a thing.
This is not a live show.
Your haiku. Why not? You think you are right. I let you believe because it does not matter. That I'm going to take this home. I'm going to frame it.
Is that about me?
Fuck yeah, it's about you.
You are so self-centered. It's unbelievable.
Well, I mean, you were just here on the show talking about our relationship for 2 hours. I don't think I'm right.
No. Actually, it is not about you. It is about my experiences and realizing how to be not unhappy.
All right. So we have Kevin W.
Yes.
A double-edged sword, with or without it, you're going to cry.
It's good.
We have Robert J. Inspiration hit. Something about love. Oh, shit. Damn. Already spent.
Love the punctuation in that one.
We have C. Muldrow. Cupid aims his bow. Arrows puncture vital bits. Blood spasming fits.
Love.
And Scott F's, who is disqualified. So, which one are you going to go
definitely
with?
Bits.
I like C. Muldrow's.
Yeah, the bits.
You know, like, because it mentions Cupid, it mentions bits, and it mentions blood spasming.
Yeah, that's hands down.
The good doctor is endorsing
absolutely.
That one.
To be honest,
and she's our guest.
I'm going to say this right now. My first runner up is going to be
the grammar one.
Kevin W.
Yeah,
the grammar one,
the double edged sword one.
No, the double edged sword.
Okay. I think this is a really, really clever and wonderful haiku. But I absolutely agree with it. I think it's a unanimous. It's the first unanimous thing we've ever done. C. Muldrow.
Congratulations, C. Muldrow.
C. Muldrow wins with Cupid aims his bow, arrows puncture vital bits. Blood spasming fits. The right amount of rhyme.
I really love it.
Yeah, yep. Right amount of just, you know, like condemning love, but not really at the same time. Good use of the 575.
That's great. It's kind of flawless as far as I'm concerned.
Excellent. Well, you know, I'm glad.
You get the endorsement of a PhD.
Mm-hmm. And I'm glad because she has written in every single podcast we've ever had.
Yep.
And I feel good.
This.
Yeah, I feel good about giving back to fans who happen to write in every single time.
And who listen to directions.
So C. Muldrow, here's what I'm going to need you to do. I'm going to need you to email epicpodcast@gmail.com with your shipping information, and I will get out a fantastic prize pack out to you shortly. If you have questions, comments, love letters, hate mail, email us at epicpodcast@gmail.com. I know we didn't get into too many nerdy things this episode, but I promise you we're going to have all kinds of nerdiness next show. But in the meantime, I think that's it. I think we're at a wrap, sir.
Do you want to do some plugs?
Yeah, let's do some plugs. March 2nd, Saturday, March 2nd, we have Geek Boy Burlesque, all-male nerdy burlesque review show at our bar. You can go to epicwinburlesque.com for the information for that.
Tuesday, March 5th, I will be performing at Knitting Factory in Brooklyn, New York my rap BFF, Cool Z.
I'm totally going to be
there. Who is on tour with Rashaan Ahmad. And also appearing will be Philly Moves from Toronto. So come to the rap show.
Fuck yeah. On March 9th, Saturday, March 9th, at the New Eurekan Poets Cafe, Epic Win Burlesque double feature. First show is going to be Batman, all Batman burlesque. The second show is going to be Harley Quinn.
Who's hosting the Batman show?
I'm hosting the Batman
show. Who's hosting the Harley Quinn show?
You are hosting the Harley Quinn show. All the acts are going to be Harley Quinn tributes. It's going to be a DC Comics love fest at the double feature.
On Tuesday, March 12th, I will be appearing at the Flamingo Cantina in Austin, Texas.
Nice.
That is my official showcase during South by Southwest this year.
Damn, I so wanted to go to that, but I'm not. You know why? Because March 15th, I'm going to be in Washington, D.C. Epic Win Burlesque is going to be in the nation's capital for two shows. It's a music venue called The Black Cat. You can find all this information on epicwinburlesque.com or our Facebook page. But we're doing two shows. We're doing a 9:15 show and an 11:30 show. Both shows are different from each other. So if you wanted to spend the whole night with us, you are more than welcome to.
You want to have another contest for next month?
Well, here's what I want to do. I want to do a Facebook or Twitter contest. So starting from when this podcast posts, what I need you to do is either follow us on Epic Win Burlesque on Facebook or EW Burlesque on Twitter. And if you follow us, your name is going to be dropped into a hat. If you
starting Thursday, February 28th.
Yes, starting on Thursday, February 28th.
Sorry, previous listeners.
Hold on. If you already follow us, all you have to do is post a comment that says, I listened to the Epic Podcast, and your name will automatically be dropped into a random drawing for a huge prize pack for next month. It's going
to
be fantastic.
But it has to be posted on Thursday, February 28th, the day that this episode airs.
Well, no, starting the day the episode airs.
Until
I guess a week before we record again.
Okay.
So basically you have until the last week of March.
Second to last Tuesday of the month. That's when we record.
Yes, the second last Tuesday of the month. You have until when this show posts, until the second last Tuesday, you have the entire 3 to 4 weeks. I'm not sure about the calendar. All you got to do is follow us on either Facebook or Twitter, or make a comment on Facebook or Twitter that you heard the Epic Podcast, and your name will be randomly selected from a large hat of names, and you will win a huge, huge night. Your prizes are going to be all kinds of, like, you're going to get, there's all kinds of stuff in there. CDs, DC Comics swag, digital comic books, maybe even a video game. I don't know, but I'm going to toss a crap ton of stuff inside of a box.
What about a date with you guys?
Nope. Nobody wants that.
Nobody wants a date with Schaefer or I.
Nope. I guess we're done.
Ladies and gentlemen, this has been the Epic Podcast Episode 7. My name is Nelson Lugo.
And my name is Schaefer the Dark Lord.
Have a good one, internets.
The Epic Podcast is brought to you by Nerdy Show. All programming on the Nerdy Show Network is listener supported. If you've enjoyed what you've heard, you can show your support by telling a friend or going to nerdyshow.com and clicking the support button. Even a small contribution gets you cool nerdy perks and allows you to take part in our monthly support drive contests. For more episodes of the Epic Podcasts, videos, contests, and other nerdy programming, visit nerdyshow.com. Subscribe to all our latest episodes via the iTunes Store. And remember to follow us on Facebook, Tumblr, and Twitter at Nerdy Show to keep up to date on the latest Nerdy Show news.